From the Moan Broadcast Center, this is Take Two. I'm Josie Huang in for A. Martinez. Today we bring you a special documentary, Stuck, Deceit, Disrepair, and Death Inside a Southern California Rental Empire. It's a look at deplorable conditions in a network of bottom-tier apartments and the poor renters who have no choice but to live there.
I guess we're labeled as like the worst mobile home park on Foothill.
Stuck, coming up on Take Two after the news. From 89.3 KPCC, this is Take Two. I'm Josie Huang in for A. Martinez. Thank you so much for joining us. Today on the program, we bring you a new documentary from KPCC's investigative team that takes a hard look at life for tenants at the bottom of the housing market and the landlords who do little to improve the subpar and often unsafe conditions they live in.
The state came in. People had to get tested because people in here got sick with typhus. Manager got typhus. My friend got typhus. A bunch of people around here have gotten typhus.
It's called Stuck, Deceit, Disrepair, and Death Inside a Southern California Rental Empire.
You'll never get nothing fixed around here. What you get is what you get. Leaving it, you know, plain and simple. You get what you get with these apartment complexes.
KPCC's Aaron Mendelson spent more than a year at some of these rundown buildings talking with tenants and trying to understand how things got so bad without any improvement or intervention from the owners. Here is his report and a warning. The content may not be suitable for all audiences.
Roaches, rats, flies, the switch.
Some days you can't even let the kids come outside. And kids, how you tell a kid they can't go outside?
It's in the walls. So as long as you can prevent it from coming out, then you won't inhale it.
This is a story about California's housing crisis. It's about the people on the bottom rung of the rental market. People just holding on. It's a story about the rundown apartments, the barely standing trailers, places with bedbugs, mold, fleas, sewage spills, dangerous wiring, places thousands of Southern Californians call home. It's a story about the ways the state's housing shortage means more power in the hands of landlords and very little power for tenants. With no other place to go, even the laws on the books don't count for much. I'm Aaron Mendelson, an investigative reporter at KPCC. Over the last year, my colleagues and I visited these places. We met the people who live in them. And we tried to make sense of what's going on. We'll start here at California Trailer Grove. The name is optimistic. The lot, with dozens of trailers, has only a few trees. It's dusty and run down. It's off Foothill Boulevard in Pomona. Cars stream by in both directions, and it's a place with a reputation.
I guess we're labeled as like the worst mobile home park on Foothill.
That's Kara Gomez. She lives here with her four kids and her husband. The kids' bikes are piled up on the front yard, which is a strip of artificial grass. It's one of the greenest things around. Her husband is inside tearing out the old kitchen, putting in a new one.
There's rot in the walls and stuff like that. It's a 1967 mobile home. So it's pretty old and it's been neglected. So
Kara and her husband own this trailer. They bought it for just $200. But they rent the land it sits on for about $500 a month.
Can't find that anywhere in LA, so so we've kind of stuck around.
The low rent comes with trade-offs. The land it sits on, the trailer park, is home to all sorts of critters.
And they actually started trapping cats, trapping possums, because the flea infestation was so out of control.
So out of control, people started getting sick back in 2015.
The state came in. People had to get tested because people in here got sick with typhus. Manager got typhus. My friend got typhus. A bunch of people around here have gotten typhus.
Typhus causes fever, vomiting. It can kill you if you don't get treated. It spreads through flea poop. In all, three people from the trailer park were hospitalized. Two others got sick. It was the first typhus outbreak in LA County in 6 years. And it caught the attention of researchers who wrote about it in the journal Neglected Tropical Diseases. They described a single opossum trapped at the park. It had 1,087 fleas on it. 1,087. And typhus and all the fleas, they're just one of Gomez's problems with the place.
We've had lots of threats of being shut down.
In 2016, state inspectors found 111 health and safety violations here, Everything from electrical hazards to sewage leaks to piles of garbage in the laundry room. It suspended the park's permit, but only briefly. Some problems got fixed, but not for long.
On multiple occasions, we had sewer lines explode in our yard with feces all over, feces in our kids' toys. Had to throw them away, contacted the manager. All he did was came and snaked it, tracked the feces all over my yard some more, and left.
The permit was actually suspended again 2 years later. So why does Gomez stay? Well, the rent, for one. The schools are good. And she's made friends here. It's a community. But she's frustrated at the landlord. She feels ignored. She worries about keeping her kids healthy and safe.
They should consider our family's lives. Not everybody can afford to live in a $2,000 a month place. Just because we can't afford to live in a place like that doesn't mean we're not worth being taken care of and our rights being kept up with.
Across Southern California, low-income renters spend nearly all they have to keep a roof over their heads. And what they get for their money often isn't much. I drive to the River Glen apartment complex about 30 minutes away in San Bernardino. I wanted to visit for a couple reasons. In digging through government records, I'd noticed that a lot of tenants here had been evicted. And I'd also seen it in the news.
Investigators say a group of people were playing dice just before 11 p.m. when someone opened fire on them. They believe at least one person returned fire. They found dozens of rounds from shotguns and handguns.
That's from KCAL in 2018. Eight people were shot at the apartment complex that night. I head over with my colleague Rena Palta to see the place and to understand what happened. Like at the Trailer Grove, the name of River Glen is misleading. There's no river nearby. The complex sits between an empty lot and a sports bar. It's more than 120 units, three beige buildings. There are a couple handmade for-rent posters out front. Right after the shooting, the city put out a press release saying the management company would add gates that locked, cameras, and a 24-hour security guard. But the gates are open, there is no guard. So we walk in, past an old tennis court without nets, and toward the back to the parking lot. A man tosses furniture into a dumpster. He says it belonged to someone evicted a few days ago. Nearby, there's a woman named Shay. She stands under the shade of a carport. She says she's lived here for a couple years.
I'm stuck here.
She never even saw her apartment before moving in.
It was like kind of an emergency. Because I was dealing with a situation and I had to get away, so this was my last resort.
She calls life here chaos.
I mean, this is the ghetto. This is nothing but the ghetto. It's like have you guys seen New Jack City? That's this place. They don't try nothing to stop it.
We say goodbye.
Well, there goes Shay in the Kia.
And head into the complex. We walk through the courtyard up to the second story. That's where we meet Nancy Romero. She shares a two-bedroom with her three kids, her roommate's baby, and a lot of bed bugs.
At nighttime, you know, when they're coming out, like, I grab them and I put them like in a little jar and I have them in a jar. So, yeah.
Do you have that jar?
Yeah.
Can I see it?
Yeah. These are the ones that I just run into. The other ones I've been killing and stuff, but yeah. You see all those are bed bugs.
They're reddish brown and dead. They slide around the bottom of the jar. Romero keeps the bedbugs to show the managers how bad the problem is. She and her kids have bites all over their arms. And she's embarrassed to send her three kids to school like that. She worries someone might call Child Protective Services. We talk in her living room, which is mostly empty.
So I had to throw on my couch because it was full of bugs, you know. You know, and matter of fact, it was my roommate that noticed it's something, you know, getting me, you know. And we have the newborn right there, and she's like, you know what, let's look, you know, and it was like full of bugs, like little white, little baby tiny like maggots and stuff. You know, but we spray every night, we spray, you know, we get raid, we get the alcohol, that whatever not, we be spraying everything every night.
But there's only so much a tenant can do. Infestations aren't contained to a single apartment. Insects don't read the lease. Back in 2018, the city found bedbugs in all three buildings. They told the landlord to treat it, but the bugs are still there.
We low-income people, we don't have the money to just say, come on, let's pick up and go. Yeah. You know, we don't want to live like this. Let's go. If you don't got nowhere else to go and you need to move in somewhere, you don't want your kids to be homeless, you know?
Hi.
We meet this 5-year-old. She offers us a juice box and tells us to come talk to her mom, Sherry Brown. Brown's about to put her 7-month-old down for a nap. We ask her about the security, the guard that was here after the shooting.
I want to say he was here for like 2 weeks. Mommy, go play with Dakota. Bye, go play with Dakota. But yeah, he was here for like 2 weeks and walked around, kind of felt safe, and you know, then he was gone. Talk about these gates, and the gates don't work. They let anybody in here. Literally anybody can walk up in here. You can come off the street right now with a bomb and walk through here, and you have to walk through there, and they'll see, and they won't say anything.
The they she's talking about here are the building managers who sit in an office near the entrance. There are times when Brown doesn't let her daughter play outside. She doesn't think it's safe. She says she's been here 1.5 years, and she's had a leaky ceiling, bed bugs, and a broken AC.
You'll never get nothing fixed around here. What you get is what you get. Leaving it, you know, plain and simple. You get what you get with these apartment complexes. Well, just with this one. This is like the worst one I've ever lived in.
The problems we hear about at River Glen are backed up by a long list of code violations. Inspectors found maggots in the carpets, rodents in the walls, units without hot water, mold, shoddy repairs. In 2015, the city stepped in and penalized the owners, forcing them to pay $50,000. But it doesn't feel like things have gotten better.
And it's been like this way for years. These apartments have been up for a long time, and they don't change. They've been the same. Exactly the same.
Back out in the courtyard, we can see the mountains through the haze and smog. Rena and I keep talking to anyone who will chat.
Hi.
What's up?
How are you doing?
I'm good, just
good. Like Vernon Moore. He's watching boxing on his phone when we knock.
And I usually train too, so
I keep up what's going on with
the fighters and stuff like that. But anyway, what's cracking?
Moore is a do-it-yourself kind of guy, a retired machinist who used to commute to Long Beach. Now he fishes, camps, and fixes problems in his apartment.
I've been here 4 years. You got 150-something units in here? One maintenance man. So he came, that one maintenance man came within his 8 hours of work, try to accommodate everybody.
So Moore just handles things himself, like the mold that grows in his bathroom.
So what is that?
Bleach and Fabuloso.
Fabuloso is that bright purple all-purpose cleaner. He sprays the shower.
And I noticed bleach kills the mold. So instead of having the strong bleach smell, I added the Fabuloso with some water so it can smell better than just straight bleach.
He uses the concoction twice a day. If he doesn't, the mold comes right back.
You see what I'm saying? It's in the walls. So as long as you can prevent it from coming out, then you won't inhale it.
Moore says he complained to the on-site manager about the mold a few times, but nothing happened. He doesn't really blame the managers. He blames the owners.
And you know what I think they do? Anything that code enforcement make them fix, the rent go up. When the code enforcement made them pave the whole parking lot, when they had to paint the buildings, the rent went up. So the tenants is paying for their mistakes or the stuff that they not fixing.
We talk to people as they cook dinner, as they watch Netflix. After a few hours, the building manager walks up.
Hey, my supervisor is on the phone and would like to speak to you right here. Go, hi. Monet.
Monet tells us to leave, so we do. The next day, we drive over to the management company's office. We figure we can learn more about the complex here. It's a gray Saturday morning on Highland.
Today's probably a busy day because it's the first of the month.
Excuse me, is there a manager around?
Inside the office, a woman sits behind glass, like a bank teller. She tells us there's no supervisor here. So we head back out to the sidewalk, where we chat with people stopping by to pay rent. Like Alex Martinez. He's an Army vet, wears a combat engineer hat. He's raising his great-granddaughters, who are here with him.
Every 6 months, they go up on the rent on me.
You're saying it? You're saying every 6 months it goes up?
Every 6 months. They can prove it with a cashier's check. That's all I pay with.
What's it at now?
$875.
$875. And what did you start at?
$6.
our conversation gets cut short.
Can you please disregard and move away from our property? This is private property.
Yeah, we're on the sidewalk.
Okay.
That's how we meet Monet Wilson. She's the manager who told us to leave River Glen the day before. She says tenants exaggerate how bad things are.
There's no way we will be at full occupancy if we had all them problems. I even wake up with sweats and stuff because the litigation, they jeopardizing my character.
You know, it is a really tough rental market.
It's
vacancy
a tough
rates
rental
real low. I mean, what would you say to some of the folks we've talked to have said we don't really have anywhere else to go, especially at this price point?
That's not true. Because
not
guess
true.
I don't believe so. Because PAMA management, and we don't control everything.
I mean, this is another thing that people have just told us a lot, but that their rent has gone up a lot since they moved.
Rent will go up. Common sense. Our property, the water bills are going up, the property insurance is going up, property taxes are going up. We're not raising it because we want to be a junk haul, but we give them proper notice, and it don't go up repeatedly. We got to look at our rent is still below everybody's market rate.
One of the things that tenants seem to say a lot is that it can be hard to get maintenance to come out, that you have to make 3, 4, 5 requests before something
you know
will happen.
My response to that is I would disagree.
Wilson thinks the problems with the units she manages and the need for repairs in the first place, it all goes back to the people living in the units.
If you mess your apartment up, this is where it needs to work in the landlord favor.
Bed bugs? Blame it on the dirty tenants. A security guard? If people would just behave better, they wouldn't need one.
If you bust a hole in your wall or you know your toilet's leaking and you don't report it, why is the owner at fault? At some point in time, when is it going to work for the owner?
So, just who is the owner, and how are things working out for him?
There's no nice way to put it. He's a slumlord.
This is Stuck from KPCC. We'll be back in a moment. I'm KPCC investigative reporter Aaron Mendelson, and you're listening to Stuck, Inside California's Housing Crisis. So far, our story has taken us inside the lowest rung of the rental market, to places that are dirty and dangerous.
I've lived in Mexico, third world. I haven't seen these problems like in here. Roaches, rats, flies, the switch. I'm going back. I can't afford to live like this.
That's Rocio Crespo, a longtime renter at the California Trailer Grove in Pomona. That's the trailer park that had a typhus outbreak where the state kept cracking down over sewage issues. Crespo says something I heard from lots of people.
Right now, we do need to move, but we can't get money for the place. I feel stuck. I think I am stuck.
People are stuck in housing that can be unsanitary and unsafe. Many are one step away from being homeless. I interviewed 24 tenants all over Southern California for this story and visited a half dozen apartment complexes and mobile home parks. Most of the renters I talked to don't know each other, but they all have one thing in common, their landlord. His name is Mike Niger, N-I-J-J-A-R. And the rental empire he created spans an estimated 16,000 units. That makes him and his businesses one of the biggest landlords in the state. They have rentals in places like Hemet, Los Angeles, and Bakersfield, but also Fresno, Sacramento, even Texas. It took me months of reporting to figure this out, digging through court documents, property records. All told, Mike Niger built an empire that is worth at least $1.3 billion. Many of Niger's tenants don't know his name. They just know his management company, PAMA.
PAMA, P-A-M-A Management, are one of the largest private companies in California, if not the Western United States, that rent residential space.
Meet John Middleman. He's a lawyer who's represented tenants in dozens of cases against PAMA and Mike Niger.
He's a mercenary.
Middleman works out of a suburban office park in Temecula. He's the first person I talked to about PAMA management and the conditions at properties.
I've gone into units and I've gone into a room where I turn on the light and it looks like the wall is moving. There's cockroaches everywhere.
He says management doesn't care about tenants.
When they complain about, hey, my child was shocked when she turned on the light switch or I had to put tissue in my child's ears to keep the cockroaches out at night while she's asleep. When they make complaints to the management, the result of that is often an eviction notice.
Fair housing advocates said the same thing. Tenants can see a rent increase or an eviction notice right after they complain. Middleman said it's all part of the business model for Palma and Mike Niger.
They make a profit while their tenants suffer. There's no nice way to put it. He's a slumlord.
One of Middleman's cases was a class action lawsuit about late fees. They're the same all over Palma's empire. $50 for being a few days late on rent. That's a lot of money for tenants living paycheck to paycheck. And for the company, those fees could mean millions every year. I wanted to know more about how Palma does business. So I went to Lancaster, 120 miles from Middleman's office. That's where you'll find the nonprofit Basta, which means enough in Spanish. Danny Bramson runs Basta. He's a lawyer who represents people facing eviction. And over the years, as he's helped clients with their cases, he's seen Palma grow.
I know Palma back in the day, back in 05, 06, 07, I would see them in the city of Los Angeles. And then you would slowly see them not in the city of Los Angeles. And then you would go to some of the outlying county courthouses. And then all of a sudden you'd see Palma have 20% of the caseload. Oh, okay, so that's where they all went.
To be clear, Palma is the management company. It collects rent, makes repairs, evicts tenants. But Palma doesn't own property. The rentals are owned by more than 170 businesses also connected to Mike Niger and his family. They have names like Cobra 28, Starlight Management, and Iceberg Investments. Bramson says there's a reason for all this.
So if they have different names, you can't put the scheme together.
It's three-card Monty.
That's Basta attorney Joe Zancayos.
So essentially, they're just hiding the queen. They just move it around, change a different name. If they get a bad rap with Palma, they just use Group 13. Group 13 gets a bad name, they switch it to Starlight Management. But it's essentially, it's the same folks.
He's talking about Mike Niger and a tiny circle of business partners, mostly his family. And the Basta guys are right. It's not easy to figure this out. Just in the last couple months, tenants in Pomona and L.A. got word they have new management companies. But not really. While the names of the management companies are new, they're run by longtime Palma employees. All this makes it hard to keep an eye on the big picture.
They don't care. They flaunt the law, and they know no one's going to come after them. This is really beyond private enforcement. This is beyond nonprofit enforcement. A landlord this size requires government enforcement.
The attorneys at Basta put me in touch with one of their clients, a local handyman named Jeffrey Hicks. So I meet him at his apartment in Lancaster in a Palma complex. I also meet his dog, Stormy.
Stormy.
Stormy's very friendly. I appreciate it.
While Stormy sniffs around, Hicks tells me he saw Palma cut corners when he worked for them.
Poles weren't getting cleaned. Bug spray wasn't getting sprayed. Rats weren't getting killed.
I ask him if working at Palma was different than other jobs that he'd had.
Yeah, it was very different because working there felt like a kind of a threat.
He says the work was unrelenting and there was a lot of yelling. He bought his own materials, says he didn't get reimbursed. And he was asked to do things he wasn't comfortable with. When he turned them down, he says,
they fired me in August and then they started the eviction process. I put in a lot of good work with that company. I was expecting maybe just a little like, hey, don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? Maybe we'll let you get on your feet or something for a second. But no, I didn't get none of that coming at all.
Hundreds of people work for Palma. I reached out to a bunch of them who used to work there.
You don't want to address all the tenants' issues, but you want me to drill them for their rent.
No sick days, no vacation days.
They're all about hiking up rent there, like annually.
I would get calls from people saying, you know, they've been trying to get a hold of somebody for years just to get their deposit back.
We call it like a Mickey Mouse work, meaning it was just repaired for the moment. It's not done correctly. It's just for the moment so the tenants can shut up.
If you were like 10 minutes late on your rent, I had a notice for you.
Nobody really likes to, you know, say, yeah, you know, I screwed up here. How can we fix this? It's just a matter of, like, who's going to get fired?
People that were in dire need, they would be renting from Palma management.
You just heard from Ashley Marie Theus, a former property manager, David Vasquez, a plumber, Albert Moran from the corporate office, Brianna Cook, property management, and a sales employee who asked that we not use his name. They all worked for PAMA in the last 10 years. I wanted to ask Mike Niger about what all those former PAMA workers said, about what his tenants had said. But Mike Niger wouldn't talk to us for this story. I made calls, sent emails and certified letters. At different points, I spoke to a real estate developer who works with PAMA and a lawyer who represents Mike Niger. I made interview requests through both of them. I even went to PAMA's headquarters to ask for an interview in person.
Hey, who are you looking for?
Hey, Mike Niger.
He's not available.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Did you give him my business card?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, we'll keep it. Great. Just want him to know that we're trying to reach him and hoping to speak to him.
Okay.
No luck. As we are getting ready to air this story, Mike Niger's attorney sent us a letter. Quote, PAMA management cares about the communities and the people we serve. Providing affordable housing to those who need it is our mission. The letter goes on to say, very often, PAMA assumes management of multi-unit apartment complexes in the community that are subject to city and county code enforcement violations due to years of deferred maintenance and does the necessary to improve those properties, clear the violations, and make it possible for families to continue to occupy those buildings. Mike Niger declined our interview request. But there is no talking about PAMA management without talking about Mike Niger. He's been building this empire since the 1970s. Last year, he testified he's the majority shareholder of PAMA Management Incorporated, and it's afforded him a pretty nice life. Niger lives in a 12,000-square-foot mansion in an area Forbes magazine once called America's Most Expensive Zip Code. Zillow estimates it's worth $6 million. I wanted to see it myself.
Okay, so we're driving through hilly, shaded streets in Monrovia. We're on our way to Bradbury here.
I was in the car with my editor, Mike Kessler.
Good morning.
Good morning. Private community, you need permission to get into.
You need permission to go in?
Point that
on me. Okay.
I don't know what you're doing, so please don't point it right before now.
All right. Okay, sorry, sir.
Yep. We'll turn around.
Just going back up.
While we're in the car, I go over stuff I found in permits, online, in public records, and newspaper articles.
We know that it's a huge estate, has this very fancy drive-up. They have a $30,000 aquarium, a vineyard in the back, a swimming pool, a reflecting pool, you know, kind of all the amenities you could imagine in this Tuscan-inspired estate that they call Via Bellefontaine.
We couldn't get a look at it. Even though Mike Niger wouldn't talk, we can still hear how he thinks about his business. I tracked down two depositions Niger gave when he was being sued by tenants. They shed light on who he is and how PAMA operates. This video deposition is from December 2012.
I get the reports on how many people are in evictions.
What report is that?
Through the eviction list.
The video shows Niger in a drab conference room. He seems bored and irritated. The case involves the Jimenez family. Tenants PAMA tried to evict three times. For the family's attorney, Grant Riley, getting information is like pulling teeth. While tenants say the company is hands-off when it comes to repairs, Niger's answers show the company is very hands-on about the eviction process.
What is in the eviction list?
Eviction list, the people who are going to are in eviction.
Does it identify the name of the tenant?
Yes.
Does it identify the date that the unlawful detainer was filed?
Yes.
Niger said the eviction list could be updated every day. Tenants who got to the end of the process were locked out of their unit by the sheriff. Renters we talked to from Lancaster to San Bernardino told us how hardcore PAMA is about evictions. I dug through public records and I found more than 4,000 eviction lockouts connected to PAMA over the last decade. PAMA accounted for 1 in 20 of all lockouts in San Bernardino County. In the deposition, Mike Niger says he doesn't want to kick people out.
We must follow the laws. We are not there to retaliate against people. We are not there to punish people. Tenants, they are very important to us. Without them, we wouldn't be in business.
While tenants say it's a struggle to get problems fixed, Niger testified it's not his fault. He says tenants cause problems on his properties. They cost him money.
A lot of wear and tear, a lot of bad people living there.
And a lot of bad people living there, what do you mean by that?
People who destroy your property.
And what's
the tenants?
It's a little hard to hear. He's saying bad tenants. He's talking about the apartment complex in Riverside. I've seen a financial statement from that building. It shows that security deposits were rarely returned. In 1 year, Palma didn't return any money, not $1. It kept $13,000 in deposits. In a deposition from another case that settled back in 2012, Mike Niger lays out his life story. In a lot of ways, it's all American. He was born in India and immigrated to Northern California at 18. Niger picked peaches on his aunt's farm, but he didn't like it.
I was too scared to pick peaches, so I wanted to get away as far as I could. Next college I got accepted was San Luis Obispo.
While he was in school, he worked for McDonald's. Later, he got an engineering degree and worked for Halliburton, the oil company.
They were having me drive a truck, so I ran into a few accidents, so they let me go.
Okay, you were driving a truck?
70-footer trucks.
Ah.
I had no experience.
Why did you obtain your real estate license in 1978?
Niger pauses for 12 full seconds before answering the question. He shrugs, looks around the room, and smiles.
I don't know. Be frank with you.
By the late 70s, Niger was in real estate. It's a family affair. He and his brother co-founded Niger Realty. Today, his sister handles property management, and Mike Niger's three sons have all worked for Palma. But he said the buck stops with him. And Mike Niger, we should say, does not take kindly to criticisms of his business. In the 2012 deposition, an opposing attorney asks questions about the company. The woman you hear is Niger's attorney, and then Niger fires back.
On all of his other
You've
properties.
Done enough fishing expeditions. You manufactured this stupid lawsuit.
Tell me, why is this lawsuit stupid?
You manufacture it.
How did
you
I
You put those roaches in those places. You pay these people to come and testify.
Niger accuses the attorney of planting roaches on the property. To be clear, this was the second case in a legal saga. There had already been a trial. A jury had already sided with the Jimenez family against Palma. Jurors found their unit was uninhabitable. There were roaches, plumbing problems, and electrical issues. One exhibit from the trial that stood out to me was a photo. It showed the nebulizer the family used to treat asthma in their one-year-old daughter. There was a cockroach inside of it. But now, in another suit brought by the same family, Mike Niger said he didn't believe it.
That's why I tell you, this was all set up.
Did
you? You went over there and you boondoggled the jury people with your pictures. And you.
How did I boondoggle the jury?
Well, counsel, we've already been through this and...
No, I want to know why Mr.
Riley, Mr. Riley, there are innocent people convicted every day by jury because some sharp attorney gets up over there and want to make a lot of money, want to make a name for himself, and you're one of them.
He's clearly worked up, jabs his fingers in the air.
And you believe...
And listen, if that property was that bad, let me challenge you. If that property is bad, how come the other people are living there? How come the city hadn't come put me in jail? How come a health inspector hadn't come and shut the building down?
So why hadn't the health inspector shut the building down? Why isn't Mike Niger in jail?
For a long time, John Gotti could say that. And the fact that you're not in jail doesn't mean that you're innocent.
This is Stuck, Inside California's Housing Crisis, from KPCC. Stay tuned. I'm Aaron Mendelson. Welcome back to Stuck, Inside California's Housing Crisis from KPCC News. We're going deep inside the rental empire of one of California's biggest landlords, Mike Niger and his company, Palma Management. In our year-long investigation, we identified an estimated 16,000 units connected to Palma, all worth well over $1 billion. Billion with a B. There's a long trail of paperwork showing serious problems at these properties. Things like shoddy repairs, security issues, cockroach and bedbug infestations.
You see, all those are bedbugs.
Feces all over, feces in our kids' toys. Had to throw them away.
I turn on the light, and it looks like the wall is moving.
There's cockroaches everywhere.
Government regulators have been busy at Palma Properties. At the trailer park in Pomona, they suspended the operating permit twice because of sewage issues. At the complex in San Bernardino, there are hundreds of pages of code violation documents. The city put a lien on the property after Palma failed to fix things. So regulators have cracked down here and there. But no one is considering the big picture. Even if Palma fixes and cleans up one of its properties, like the trailer park in Pomona, there's still hundreds of other Palma properties where similar problems might exist. So getting back to Mike Niger's question from his deposition.
How come the city had not come put me in jail? How come a health inspector had not come and shut the building down?
I talked to a legal expert to get answers.
Just point blank, is it lawful to rent out a unit that has mold or cockroaches in it?
No.
That's Gary Blasey.
I'm a retired law professor from the UCLA School of Law.
He says local governments and the legal system don't really do much about tenant safety.
Judges don't consider these to be crimes in the same way that they consider shoplifting to be a crime or not paying your parking tickets to be a crime.
I asked him Mike Niger's question directly. If conditions in his building are really so bad,
how come the city hadn't come put me in jail?
For a long time, John Gotti could say that. And the fact that you're not in jail doesn't mean that you're innocent. It means that you haven't been successfully prosecuted. And that's not really up to you. That's up to the rest of us. If someone is operating their business illegally, a good system, which we don't have, would deal with that.
Low-income tenants don't have political power, he says. They may not be citizens. They don't donate to political campaigns. Landlords, on the other hand, have tremendous power. They're organized, they have money, and they spend it to influence the political process. For example, public records show that Palma Management donated $11,000 to support the current mayor of San Bernardino. The company donated another $12,000 to defeat a ballot proposition that could have expanded rent control. But it's not just that landlords have money to throw around. Blasey says property owners have been treated as a special class under the law for centuries.
We give landlords and slumlords protections that no other business has. For example, if you compare the enforcement by the health department of restaurants with their inspection of apartments, it's a completely different world. They have a fantastic system for keeping track of restaurants.
There's no letter grade in the window for rentals. You have no idea if your landlord has a good track record or a bad one, if a unit is safe or it isn't. I wanted Blasey's answer to the other question from Mike Niger. If his buildings are really so bad, why doesn't the government just shut them down?
The health department almost never shuts a building down.
Blasey says with the housing crisis, if you shut a building down, people will become homeless.
There's so much tension on getting people into any kind of housing that nobody's paying much attention to what kind of housing they're going to be able to get into.
Blasey calls these places slums. Straight up, he doesn't hedge.
I spent the first half of my career trying to get people out of slums and the second half trying to get them back in.
By the end of my interview with Blasey, I had another question. I wanted to know who would own a building with mold, mildew, roaches, rats. The short answer, someone who wants to make money fast.
There are people who specialize in renting to low-income people who make a lot more money than the people renting to high-income people because their costs are so much lower.
It's a little counterintuitive that if you rent to low-income people, you can make more than if you rent to richer people. But buildings in poor neighborhoods, they cost less to buy and have lower property taxes. Rents are lower, but they're not that much lower. And poor neighborhoods are exactly where Palma manages housing. I checked census data and crunched the numbers on this. It turns out that most Palma properties we located are in the poorest areas of the counties that they're in. It made me wonder, can you own rental housing in these places, but invest more in repairs and still make money? So I went to visit a property manager.
My name is Alec Bernstein, and I'm the owner, CEO of LRS Realty and Management.
Bernstein has worked in property management for 40 years, about the same amount of time as Mike Niger. Their worlds collided in 2017. That's when the Los Angeles city attorney filed a lawsuit against Niger and Palma Management. It was over a 425-unit complex in South L.A.
Candles marked the spot of a recent shooting. According to neighbors, it is the type of activity the Los Angeles city attorney is trying to stop. It filed this nuisance abatement lawsuit against the complex owner.
This is from NBC4. Palma managed this property, and one of Niger's companies owns it.
The city attorney is seeking a court order to have the owner live at the complex until changes are made.
The lawsuit said things had gotten so bad that for safety reasons, LAPD officers would go in groups. No fewer than four at a time, they would try to go in groups of eight. The city attorney's office blamed Palma, alleging extreme neglect. It asked Alec Bernstein, with his background in property management, to take a look. Bernstein said he'd never heard of Mike Niger or Palma Management before, but as he walked around the complex in Baldwin Village,
I was blown away by how bad the property looked. Grass that was 3 feet high, graffiti everywhere, trash in the hallways, and cars parked right on the grass, which I've never seen before. That was unusual. Or to have a property that's worth $100 million looking like that, it shocked me.
In a court filing, Bernstein called the property management astonishingly lax.
Another interesting part of this equation, the properties around this property, a lot of them are in really good shape. This isn't a issue where, oh, it's a bad area or something like that. If your neighbor has a great property, why isn't yours? It's a lack of management, a lack of will, a lack of money, a lack of understanding.
So you can own a property in a low-income neighborhood, keep it in a nice shape, and still make money. It sounds like that's what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, what I've noticed in this business, some owners will tell me, well, that's just a rental, or that's in the ghetto, or that's... No, there's good people everywhere. And if you make a nice home, they will come in to your property, they will take care of the place, they will pay their rent. But if you leave it like this, then you're going to have issues, and that's the problem. If you don't care, they don't care.
Bernstein told me many of these problems were easily solvable, that a landlord could make the complex safe and still make a profit. He told a court that he guessed Palma brought in more than $400,000 a month just at this apartment complex. The legal case settled before it went to trial. Niger and Palma agreed to add security guards and locks. The agreement also gave tenants $50 gift cards to Albertsons and four free loads of laundry a month. During the year I've been reporting this story, I've learned that in California, it's hard, even impossible, for regulators or reporters to get basic facts about the rental market, like who the big landlords are, how many units they own, or how many people they've evicted. There's no law that says landlords have to report any of these things. There's no law that says the government has to keep track. Matthew Desmond is a sociologist at Princeton.
We need to do a better job of bringing transparency and light to low-income housing markets.
Desmond says that answering even the simplest questions can be really difficult.
I could own 1,000 properties in LA, but they could be under 1,000 different LLC names or shell companies. And so answering really basic questions like who owns our cities, who's doing the most evicting, those are questions that we don't have great answers to.
A law to create a rental database was introduced in Sacramento last year. It would have tracked basic stuff, rents, vacancies, ownership, and evictions at rental complexes. But landlord groups hated it. They have sway in the state house and big lobbying budgets, and the bill was killed. So we don't know very much. And neither do the government agencies that are supposed to keep us safe.
There's a patchwork of enforcement in California. To talk about how that works, I'm at the corner of Magnolia Street and Maxon Road here in El Monte. So when we're talking about trailer parks like one just down Magnolia Street, the state regulates those. If we're talking about apartment buildings like the one I can see down Maxon Road, cities and counties are responsible for those. Both of these properties are connected to Mike Niger, by the way. This system means that a trailer park can be right next to apartments, and they'll be regulated by different agencies. A building across the street that's technically in another town, that's regulated by yet another agency.
No one steps back to look at the full picture. Mike Niger's companies don't own much land in the glamorous coastal areas of Southern California. They only have a few properties in the city of LA. More recently, they've been buying in areas like Oildale, right across the Kern River from Bakersfield. If you've heard of Oildale, it might be because country music legend Merle Haggard grew up there in a boxcar.
Put my head close to the window, watch Oildale fade away.
These days, the community is mostly known for drugs, crime, and poverty. The local paper called it the Tenderloin District of Bakersfield. Some of the streets don't have sidewalks. People walk or ride bikes in the dust on the side of the road. One thing that draws people here is the cheap rent. That's how Marissa and Angelica Rodriguez got here. I spoke with the sisters on a 100-degree day in Bakersfield. We met at an office building a few minutes' drive from Oildale. Angelica's infant son, Marco, was there too. He was trying to eat solid food.
Yeah, he's 10 months.
Back in 2015, the sisters were looking for a place they could afford. Marissa, the younger one, and her boyfriend Lorenzo had a new baby. They named her Jenica. Angelica, the big sister, found a trailer on McCord Avenue. It was just a few $100 a month. Angelica was the adult, so she signed the lease with Palma Management.
So at the time, I didn't understand anything. I was like, well, we need a spot. He didn't really explain anything to me. He already had it right there on the table. So basically, it was just for me to, like, just sign and just go, basically.
Turns out this trailer was rent to own. Under the contract, they were buying it for $10,000 with 10% interest, $150 a month. They also rented the space the trailer sat on. That cost an extra $325 a month. The heater didn't work. Wires dangled from the ceiling. When they'd plug something in, the outlet sparked. Angelica remembers the tarp they used to keep the rain from coming in.
It obviously wasn't a good place to stay. Like, it wasn't at all.
When they asked Palma for repairs, they say they didn't get much help. But they tried to make do, make it home. Marissa and her daughter Jenica spent lots of time together.
She was, like, always a happy baby. Quiet, probably. Yeah, quiet, like me too. But, like, we're always together, so, like, I didn't really worry about nothing because I always had her.
On January 24th, 2016, Marissa noticed the lights were flickering and the power had been going in and out, not just inside, but all over the trailer park. That evening, Marissa put Jenica to bed in her pink onesie. She wrapped her up in blankets. And then she and Lorenzo settled into the living room.
Me and my baby daddy were just watching TV, and then we end up falling asleep, and all I remember next is him waking me up, and then the whole trailer was on fire.
There's a big
emergency.
The fire's bad.
Where is it at?
It's 123 McCord Avenue.
Okay.
The trailer parked behind the house.
Okay.
There's a baby trapped in there. The fire's bad.
The trailer was engulfed, the flames 10 feet high. An investigator found the fire started in the baby's room. It was either the electrical system or the space heater. Marissa and Lorenzo, and then the firefighters and a sheriff's deputy, all tried to save Jenica. But it was too hot to run in. Lorenzo burned himself trying. Jenica Occhiano Lozano died that night. She was 5 months and 4 days old. The autopsy report said she died of smoke inhalation. She was wearing what was left of her pink onesie. She hadn't gotten her teeth yet. Jenica's death led to an investigation by California housing regulators. Here are some of their findings. 1. The mobile home where Jenica died was not supposed to be there. Palma Management did not have a permit for it, which means it never should have been rented out in the first place. 2. Palma broke real estate law in several ways with that rent-to-own contract. And 3. There were no smoke or carbon monoxide detectors in the trailer. If there had been, as the law requires, 5-month-old Jenica might have lived. The report didn't mince words. It said Palma Management had a total disregard for the law. And it said that total disregard for health and safety codes, quote, led to the death of an infant.
When you have gross negligence resulting in the loss of human life, we have to speak honestly and truthfully about that.
That's James Demas. He's an attorney for the California Department of Real Estate. He says what happened in Oildale goes far, far beyond the issues his agency usually sees.
This is the only case I'm aware of where the negligence of a real estate licensee was so severe that it led to the loss of human life.
The agency brought the case to a judge. In December 2018, she revoked two real estate licenses, one from Niger Realty and the other from Everett Miller, a longtime business partner of Mike Niger. Both are challenging the ruling, but they won't get their licenses back for months if they get them back at all. The agency also tried to revoke Mike Niger's license, but he wasn't the designated officer. His name wasn't on the paperwork. He still has his license and his business. After the fire, the Kern County District Attorney stepped in. Records show that prosecutors considered charging Palma Management with murder. They eventually filed charges of involuntary manslaughter. In a hearing, a prosecutor called Palma a, quote, sophisticated slumlord, shielding their business behind different names. He said the company caused the death of a newborn baby. But the case didn't go anywhere. A judge dismissed the criminal charge, saying there wasn't enough evidence. In a separate civil case, Marissa and Angelica Rodriguez and Lorenzo Lozano sued. They settled with Palma for an undisclosed amount. Palma denied liability. Marissa, Jenica's mom, still grieves.
It still feels the same, like, when it happened. Like, when I talk about it, I cry because it hurts me. That's why I really try not to talk about it. But my feelings still feel the same, like, when I lost it, when all that was going through, I still feel the same.
Marissa brought a stuffed bunny rabbit and a small pink box with her to the interview. She kept the box close.
These are her ashes, and... Well, ever since I got them, I've been having them take her everywhere with me.
Before the fire, Marissa and Angelica didn't know anything about Mike Niger or Palma Management. My colleague Rena Palta and I asked Marissa what she'd learned about the company since.
Well, I learned that, what do they call them, a slum? What do they say? A
slumlord.
Yeah, that's why I found it. He was. I just think it's messed up because, like, how can people, you know, like, do that?
And did it bring you any closure when the lawsuit was over?
Kind of, but not really, because nothing really happened to them. So it's like, I know I lost my daughter. They could have just fixed everything.
If you don't mind me asking, what do you think should happen to that company?
Well, they should get locked up for it. Like, come on now. Like, they're doing this around basically California. And it seems like they don't care about it, so they should get locked up for it.
Mike Niger still has his real estate empire. The space where Jenica died has another trailer on it now. Since Jenica's death, businesses connected to Mike Niger have bought up more properties in Oildale. Palma Management continues to expand its reach. Before we go, I should tell you that Vernon Moore, the man in San Bernardino who sprayed his shower twice a day.
I added the Fabuloso with some water so it can smell better than just straight bleach.
He was shot and killed in the parking lot of his building. This happened in October. Police said they didn't have any leads. Vernon Lee Moore was 51. I'm Aaron Mendelson. I reported and wrote this story with help from Rena Palta, Priska Neely, Shayna Deloria, and Chavez Sanchez. It was edited by Adrian Hill, Mike Kessler, Megan Garvey, Dana Amahir, Mark Schufs, and John Raby. Our engineers are Valentino Rivera and Eduardo Perez. Chris Greenspan helped produce. For more, go to LAS.com.
You've been listening to a special report from KPCC and LAist called Stuck, Deceit, Disrepair, and Death Inside a Southern California Rental Empire. If you have questions about what you've heard about low-income housing and regulation in California, you can call us at 626-583-5281. Leave your question on our voicemail and your name, and we will try to answer it on air later this week. Or you can tweet us at Take2 or at KPCC. We hope to hear from you.